This thing is on me. You know, God has, you know, and you know, the sad thing is, we always are waiting for the other person to change. We're always waiting for, well, you know, let them, you know, they're the one that did this. Let them do this. And God, no matter where you look at it in the Word, God puts the personal responsibility on the individual. And so you've got to put it in your will that you are going to step out and try to reconcile this situation. It's an act of the will.
Welcome to Anchored in Jesus, the teaching ministry of Dr. William R. Glaze, founder of the Pittsburgh Layman's Bible Institute, author, and senior pastor of Bethany Baptist Church. We thank you for joining us today for the conclusion of Unforgiveness, a mother whose son had been unjustly victimized. So let's join Dr. Glaze for the conclusion of Unforgiveness, a mother whose son had been unjustly victimized.
You see that unforgiveness defiles a person's life. Unforgiveness will cause your life to become so defiled. You may be the sweetest mother in the world, but if you are harboring unforgiveness, I'm telling you right now that your life is defiled. You say, well, how is my life defiled? Your life is defiled in three ways. It's defiled from the standpoint of bitterness, it's defiled from the standpoint of blame, and it's defiled from the standpoint of bondage. Let me give you the first one, bitterness. That unforgiveness, what does it harbor in my heart? Revenge, animosity, ill will towards another person. And so now my life is defiled because I want to see something bad happen to another person. Oh, I might want to, and you know, a lot of times, how do we couch it? Well, you know, I just want them to get right. You know, my only desire is that they would get right. And you know that you're lying. You know that you want to see something bad happen to them. You want to see something, cut them off at the knees because you hurt me. You did me wrong. And so now your life is defiled with bitterness. And not only is your life defiled with bitterness, but your life is defiled with blame. And that is, as long as I can put the blame on somebody else, that's going to keep me from dealing with this unforgiveness that's in my heart. Well, if she would have did such and such a thing, or if he would have did that, or if she did this, or if he did that. And you know what? As long as we can keep blaming somebody else, as long as we can keep casting it off on somebody else, what does that do? That keeps us from dealing with the bitterness in our heart. And so blame becomes an escape goat for the unforgiveness that's in our heart. And you know, sometimes I think that people like having something against somebody else. You know, they like to have something they can hold over their head. And even when people are, the other party might want to come and reconcile and get it together, that the party that's dealing with this issue of being defiled by bitterness and blame, that they don't want to deal with it because they've almost become comfortable in the fact that now I got something against you and I can hold you in this prison. That's, you hurt me, and this is the only way that I can control you, by keeping this unforgiveness in my heart. And so, going back to something we said earlier, it's just like drinking the poison and hoping that somebody else will get sick. How are you defiled? By bitterness, by blame, and then by bondage. See, when you refuse to forgive, even though you don't think about it, that you are held captive by another person. That when you refuse to forgive, just think about this. A lot of times you won't even go certain places where you know the other person is going to be. Or if you go and a place where you think the person is going to be, then you might try to duck and dodge and get around. And what is that? That's bondage. That now you have become a slave to your unforgiveness. Because your world has what? Your world has just shrunk. Here you had, God had this big, massive, expansive world for you to live in, and now your world has been shrunken down because unforgiveness has limited you in the places that you can go. By many are defiled Some of you are sitting here today on Mother's Day, sitting here looking pretty, and you're defiled. You're defiled. You're defiled with bitterness, you're defiled with blame, and you're defiled with bondage. And that's so sad. I would have a very difficult time just living my life with unforgiveness in my heart. And yet and still, many people do it, and they have opportunities to get it right and make it right, and they take it almost as a badge of honor that they wear their unforgiveness. And yet and still, they got all this defilement going on in their lives. Can you imagine Mary? Mary lived after Jesus died on the cross. Here was Mary. God looked at her when he decided to send his son into the world, and she found favor in his sight. Evidently, she lived such a life that she was able to get the attention of God, that when he decided for his son to come and live in this life, that she was the one who birthed him. And now she's standing at the cross and seeing all this happen to her son. Can you imagine the anger and the animosity that must have came up in her heart? But I have to believe, again, we don't read it in Scripture, but I have to believe somewhere that Mary went and she dealt with that, and she was able to let it go, because that's the type of character that she had. And yet and still, people continue to hold on to it and carry it on. As we continue on and look at how do we overcome unforgiveness? How do we overcome unforgiveness? Only one word. There's only one way to overcome unforgiveness, and that is forgive, forgive, forgive. That's the only way. God is not going to drop down some magic dust from heaven and sprinkle it on you, and all of a sudden everything is well. That the only way that you can overcome unforgiveness is to forgive. So when we think about that, what is forgiveness? What is forgiveness? One person said that we are most like beasts when we kill. We are most like men when we judge, and we are most like God when we forgive. Let me read that again. We are most like beasts when we kill. We are most like men when we judge, and we are most like God when we forgive. What is forgiveness? Well, let me start by talking about what forgiveness is not. Forgiveness is not a feeling. Forgiveness is not a feeling. People think that, well, I gotta feel like I want to forgive, then I'll forgive. No, forgiveness is not a feeling. Forgiveness may change your feelings, but forgiveness is not a feeling. So if you're sitting waiting for some feeling to come over you in order for you to forgive somebody, it ain't happening. It ain't gonna happen, all right? Some people say, well, forgiveness is forgetting. No, forgiveness is not forgetting, because even though we forget, we still haven't dealt with, oh, somebody helped me this morning, the offense. We can forget. We can say, oh, I've forgotten. Even though we forget, that causes us to not deal with the issues. And then some people say, well, forgiveness is letting things slide. Well, again, it's not letting things slide. Because if there's an offense that has been present, then you need to deal with that offense. So what is forgiveness? What is forgiveness? Forgiveness is when the offended person opens the cage of their soul and sets the resentment and ill will free against the offender. Now, if you can imagine this, somebody has offended me, and now I've got resentment in my heart, and I hold that resentment in my heart, and I walk around, and somebody asks me, have you forgiven that person? And I say, yes, I've forgiven them, but I've still got this resentment caged up inside of me. Somebody asked me, have you forgiven that person? Yes, I have forgiven that person, but I still got this thing caged up inside of me. The only way that true forgiveness will take place is for me to open the cage of my soul and let the resentment and the ill will against that person go free. That's the only way. If I still got a tinge of bitterness, a tinge of resentment, then I haven't forgiven that person. And I talk to people all the time, and I'll ask them, have you forgiven them? And then they'll say, yeah, I have forgiven them. And then we'll talk a little bit more, and I'll say, you haven't forgiven them. I can just listen to you, and I can hear you right now that you haven't forgiven that person. And as we continue and look at this idea of forgiveness, there are three elements of forgiveness. And I want to share this with you, and I'm going to be done. Three elements of forgiveness. We want to look at the manner, the method, and the motive. The manner is the choice. The method is the will. And the motive, I know you don't want to hear this on Mother's Day. I know you don't hear this. Is obedience. Not because a person don't deserve it, not because they didn't do you wrong, but because God says that we should forgive. So the method, the manner, and the motive. When somebody offends you, the manner, it's a choice. You've got to make the choice. You got to make a conscious choice to forgive. All right? So somebody offends you, right? They have created a debt against you. Now this person owes you. They owe you. They've offended you, and now they owe you. You can get the payment in two ways. You can get the payment in two ways. First of all, you can take a payment. And what does it mean to take a payment? That means you withhold forgiveness, that you dwell on the wrong, that you are cold and aloof, that you give up on the relationship, that you inflict emotional pain on the other person, that you gossip, and that you lash back by seeking revenge. That's taking a payment. You owe me. You owe me. And you're going to pay me. And I'm going to pay it by talking about you. I'm going to get you to pay it. I'm going to talk about you like a dog. Any way that I can, I'm going to inflict emotional pain on you. When I come in your presence, I'm going to make your life a living hell. I'm going to get this payment. You're going to pay me for this. Let me read that again. You can take a payment by withholding forgiveness, dwelling on the wrong, being cold and aloof, giving up on the relationship, inflicting emotional pain, gossiping, lashing back by seeking revenge. You can take a payment. Or you can make the conscious choice to make a payment. And how do I make a payment? By releasing the other person from the penalty that they deserve, by fighting against the painful memories, by speaking gracious words, by tearing down walls, by enduring consequences of material and physical injury. That I can take a payment or I can make a payment. Now making the payment is going to be a little difficult because it's going to take, as we said right there, it's going to be a choice, and it's going to be a choice that you have to remind yourself over and over and over again that I'm not taking a payment, but I'm making a payment. And it's going to take you, oh my Lord, and I know we don't want to do this. The first message that I preached in this series was on pride. The first message that I preached in this series was on pride. And the reason that some people are not going to make a payment is because there's too much pride. You've been hurt, you've been wounded, you got too much pride to bow down and humble yourself and say, let's reconcile, let's work through this, let's come together and see how we can work this thing out, because this unforgiveness that's in my soul is eating away at me, and I need to deal with it. I just can't, it can't stay there anymore. It's just like Miss Havisham. The rats are eating away at my very soul. And so, ask the question. See, here's how you can tell if you've forgiven the other person. Right here. Are you taking a payment or are you making a payment? And if you're not making a payment, you haven't forgiven them. Because you still running around talking about them, dogging them out, trying to, in any way that you can, to get out, wound and hurt, and take that payment. So first of all, it's a choice that you got. Unforgiveness or forgiveness is a choice. You got to make the choice to forgive. The second thing is that it involves your will. That you got to say, okay, I've made the choice. Now I got to, you know, the mother bird sometimes, right? That maybe in the nest, everybody's in agreement that the baby bird got to fly. But the baby bird might not have the will to fly. So what does a mother do? See? So we're hoping that God doesn't, we're hoping that God don't have to push you out. But our desire is that you would step out. You made the choice, and now you're saying, I'm stepping out. This thing is on me. You know, God has, you know, and you know the sad thing is, we always are waiting for the other person to change. We're always waiting for, well, you know, let them, you know, they're the one that did this. Let them do this. And God, no matter where you look at it in the Word, God puts the personal responsibility on the individual. And so you've got to put it in your will that you are going to step out and try to reconcile this situation. It's an act of the will. And so here's some things that you say, that I will not dwell on this incident. I will not bring this incident up again and use it against you. I will not talk to others about this incident. I will not let this incident stand between us or hinder our relationship. I will. Now, again, I'm not naive enough to think that that there's some relationships that really will never be the same as they were. You know, I'm not that naive. You know, I might have been born at night, but I wasn't born last night. So I know that some relationships, once an offense has been created, that they will never be the same. But there still can be reconciliation. And in this reconciliation, at least you can walk away with some understanding that we'll never be like we were before, but you know what? At least we've sat down, we've dealt with this, and we've reconciled this relationship. The method is the will. And then finally, the motive is plain and simple obedience. Obedience. What more can I say? Obedience. That God says that he's not going to forgive you unless you forgive somebody else. God says that he's not going to hear your prayers if you have unforgiveness in your heart. Now, I don't know how else to say it other than maybe saying it like this. First of all, the obedience is to Christ's example, first of all. Obedience to Christ's example. That when Christ was dying on the cross, that Christ said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. What Philippians chapter 2, Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. So Christ has given us the example that you don't have to look around and try to figure out how to do this. Christ has given you the example when he died on the cross. So first of all, it's obedience to Christ's example. Secondly, it's obedience to Christ's command. That Christ commanded that believers forgive one another. In Matthew 6, 14 and 15, Matthew 18, 21 through 22, Luke 17, 3 and 4, Christ commanded his followers to exercise forgiveness. Third, obedience to God's command. Obedience to God's command. In Colossians 3:13, God said that we should forgive one another. We should forgive one another. A fourth reason is obedience to the love of God within us. That the love of you, my Lord, you got the love of God in you. You know what Romans 5:5 says? Romans 5:5 says that the love of God has been shed abroad in your heart. That you, if you are a believer, that you have the love of God dwelling in you. And if you have the love of God, you mean to tell me you got the love of God living in you and you can't forgive? There was a husband and wife. They were having some difficulties, and they were always getting into conflict. So they decided they were going to have a little box, and they were going to put in their complaints at the end of the month. They would look at the complaints and read them. And so throughout the month, you know, they would put whatever it was, you know, didn't clean up after yourself, you know, left the door open, didn't take the trash out, you know, and they would just keep putting it in the box. So they got the box, and they started pulling out the wife's. And she said that, you know, you didn't pick up your clothes, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, and just started pulling them out. And finally they got to the husband's, and there was only one in there. And it said, I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. Where's the love of God at? Where's the love of God at? That when we hold these things against other people, where is the love of God that we say that we are a follower of Jesus Christ? And Jesus said in his word that if you love me, that you will love one another and that you will forgive one another. And then finally, we see the obedience to the example set by Stephen in Acts chapter 7. That after Stephen had preached about Jesus Christ, the people got so angry at him that they ran upon him and they took stones and they started to stone him to death. And while they were pelting the stones off of him, he looked up into heaven and he saw the Son of God standing at the right hand of God. And he said unto the Father, lay not this sin to their charge. We have the example of the obedience of Stephen. So let me ask you a question as I close the message today. How can you continue to hold on to unforgiveness? How can you continue? I'm not going to say that you're going to all of a sudden have this magic wand waved over you and you're going to be a forgiving person. But at least today, would you please, at least today, say that I'm going to start this process. I know that it's, you know, it may take some time, but at least today I'm going to start the process of working through this unforgiveness in my life.
Thank you for joining us today on Anchored in Jesus. Tune in next time for the first half of Temptation, Where Did the Young Man Go Wrong? If you would like to request an audio copy or the notes of today's message, Unforgiveness, A Mother Whose Son Had Been Unjustly Victimized, you can contact us at anchoredinjesus.org and request Unforgiveness, A Mother Whose Son Had Been Unjustly Victimized. That's anchoredinjesus.org and request unforgiveness, a mother whose son had been unjustly victimized. Or call us at 877-831-5060. When you visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, you can view many of the other teachings by Dr. Glaze. Dr. Glaze is the author of 7 books. For more information about these resources and how to order, visit anchoredinjesus.org or call 877-831-5060. We also invite you to like us on Facebook at Anchored in Jesus Ministries. If you would like to make a financial contribution, please visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, or send it to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15206. Once again, that website is anchoredinjesus.org, or you can send your financial contribution to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15206. It's through your prayers and gifts that we remain on the air. Our title, Anchored in Jesus, comes from Hebrews chapter 6, verse 19, which lets us know that Jesus is our high priest and an anchor for the soul. Now, for Dr. Glaze and our entire volunteer staff, I'm your host, Sonia Hall, reminding you, you don't have to be tossed in the storms of life. Your soul can be anchored in the Lord.